Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers, and from Edvest and You, a loan product of the NEEF Network, a local nonprofit agency providing college student loans and student loan refinancing options. Information online at nhstudentloans.org or by calling 1-855-887-5430.
Hi, everyone. Laura Kanoy here. Today, we're airing a recording of our third virtual event, The Exchange Live from Home, how families are preparing for back-to-school season. We held the event this past Tuesday night on Zoom, and the audience was able to ask questions. Visit nhpr.org/events to register for our next event on Tuesday, September 1st at 7 p.m. We'll be talking about mental health and self-care during the COVID-19 pandemic. From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange Live from Home. Tonight's show is the third in our special summer series of virtual events examining the impact of COVID-19 on New Hampshire and where our state goes from here. Today, with all the uncertainty about heading back to school, we're talking about how your family hopes to navigate the new academic year. What did you learn from the end of school last year? What were your family triumphs and struggles? And how are you approaching the new school year together? Now, we're not focusing on different models that schools are adopting. We've done that in previous shows. Rather, we'd like to hear how families are thinking about whatever model they have to contend with, and more broadly, how family dynamics are evolving as this pandemic continues. Our guests today are Jessica Leahy, a teacher and writer. She writes about parenting and education for a wide variety of publications. Her book is called The Gift of Failure. Also with us, Tim Leahy. He's an epidemiologist at the University of Vermont Medical Center and Jess's husband. They've been writing together about back to school from a teaching, parenting, and health perspective. And also with us, KJ Dell'Antonia. She's a writer, the former editor of the New York Times Motherlode blog, and author of the book How to Be a Happier Parent. Her new novel is called The Chicken Sisters. Welcome to all of you. Jess, let's start with you. For a lot of parents, Jess, as you know, especially those who are working, who may have multiple children, they may have limited internet access or all of the above, what's one thought you'd like to share with parents to keep in mind, Jess, as far as their kids' struggles, their successes, and their happiness this year, no matter what their school situation?
You know, a lot of the kids' discontent and unhappiness and depression right now is coming from just this incredible feeling of lack of control. There's so little that kids control in general. And then in this situation where they're stuck at home and they can't see their friends and they can't even control, you know, their activities throughout the day with their friends, it's just really frustrating for them. One of the things that we can really help them with is by giving them back a little bit of control, maybe over helping with dinner, making decisions throughout the day, instead of saying, you know, what do you want to do? Give them one or two choices. Would you like to play this game or that game? And it can just sort of help them feel like they have a little bit more control over their environment. It's really hard for them and discombobulating for them to have so little control over anything right now.
That sounds like advice for littler kids. Do you want this game or that game? What do you want for dinner? What about the older kids, Jess? It's been hard for teens and young adults.
Yeah, I think what we don't tend to do very often is to ask the kids how they would like things to work. If, you know, we're so close right now, everyone's in the house together, kind of on top of each other, and we're a little sick of each other. And maybe the vision that I as a mother have for how we're supposed to sit down at the table with the napkins and all the utensils just so, maybe that's not what they want right now. And so instead of just assuming everything should go always the way I want, I like to turn to my kids sometimes and say, you know, what would your perfect dinner look like? Or what would your perfect family movie night look like? Or what would you like to do this evening? And giving some of those, just the indication even that you're listening, can be enough to really help a kid feel like they're a part of the family and not just some, you know, hanger-on or that doesn't have any say in the way things go. So again, it's just a little bit of choice, a little bit of feeling like they're involved and have a stake in the decisions we make as a family can help a lot.
Well, KJ, what's the mantra that you're keeping in mind? You have four children as this academic year approaches.
I've got two. And one is, if you see something, don't always say something. And that's kind of a really nitty gritty one We are all in here together, right? We're all super close. We have every opportunity to observe everything that our kids are doing wrong. And there's plenty of it, from the endless series of seltzer cans left all over the place to, you know, the socks in the middle of whatever. I try not to point them all out. My kids might tell you that I actually am still pointing them all out, but I assure you that I am not.
There's a lot more than what you're pointing out.
Yeah, now that I've owned this on the radio, I'm going to, you know, work even harder to, you got to let some of it go. Because under normal circumstances, we would not, you know, have quite so much opportunity when we're on top of each other to, you know, say, close that cabinet. Don't stand there with the refrigerator open. The nagging. So that's one. And the other one is I've been trying to pay attention to soaking up the good. There are really terrible things about this time, and our family has had a rough go of it in many ways, but there have also been some, you know, the fact that we're spending so much time together has its nice sides, and I try to pay attention to those.
A few months ago, KJ, you wrote an article where you urge parents not to stress too much about lessons and grades in these times. This was kind of in the middle of the spring remote learning that we were all in. And you said, our kids are learning more important lessons than academics this spring. So what were you trying to get at, KJ?
Well, especially when all of this hit so suddenly and so ferociously, we all had the rugs yanked right out from underneath us. Lots of kids were watching sports championships just, you know, not happening, you know, school no longer, everything. And I just really felt like at that moment, everybody was learning to make larger sacrifices for the greater good, whether they were 5 or 15 or, you know, 19. And we are still there, but we've definitely kind of lost sight of that right now. I think it's not feeling as much. It's hard to maintain that kind of urgency for so long, but we're still there. The need to work together, the discussions about, you know, how we're going to protect each other, those are huge and important. So the academics is probably still going to be it's still going to be hinky this year. It just is. And it's important to think about, we've got a great opportunity with our older kids to let them take some control over their academics, to make some decisions about how they want to handle it, what they want to do and when. And if they're old enough to do that, they absolutely should. And if they're little enough that like you're really having to turn the Zoom off and on, I think they can probably take a break. It'll work out. It'll work out academically. I'm not saying anything about how hard it is to have them sitting there all the time.
Yeah, and that's sort of the two themes that we're discussing this hour. One is how families are facing this academic year. And the other is, as you just said, KJ, how people are feeling about continuing to be home. Some parents are out working. Some parents are working from home. And even the parents who are out working outside of the house, you know, people don't have events, parties, meetings, things like that. So everybody's more at home together for sure. Jess, what's your take on that? How much should parents and kids really stress about the academics at this point?
I'm so glad you asked about that, because one of the things that a lot of teachers, especially teachers of younger kids, are talking about is maybe this is an opportunity to focus heavily, more so maybe even, on the social emotional learning. We have this opportunity right now where we're with our kids more often. It's going to be really hard to stay on top of everything academically, and that's okay, because especially for younger kids, they're in a window where learning about empathy and perspective taking is so important. And so one of the best things I heard recently is this opportunity to help kids see what this might be like from other people's perspective, that if we could talk to our kids and say, you know, the reason I can't, let's say your kid goes to is in one of those situations where they can go to school some of the time, and your kid has the sniffles, but they're really sad because you're going to keep them home. You can have a really great conversation with them about, well, you have this classmate, and that classmate's mom is a little bit medically fragile. She's not really well. And so can you imagine what that would be like for your classmate if his mom got sick because you had the sniffles? So if it were me, and I have older kids, but if I had littler kids right now, my focus would be so much on making up for the fact that they're not getting as much of the social emotional learning as they would playing with friends, having time to sort of, you know, have little arguments with friends and work them out. They're just not getting that. And this is a period of time where that learning is critical. Kindergarten teachers especially talk about the fact that social emotional learning and understanding social cues is way more important than the academics, the real academic stuff they learn in kindergarten. So let's spend some time focusing on that stuff rather than worrying about, you know, their ability to add 4 and 4.
Well, so Tim, let's bring you in as an infectious disease physician. What questions do you think parents should be asking themselves and asking their schools so that kids can go back to school safely?
You know, I think the big question to ask is, since we are the curriculum as parents, what are we going to teach them this year? And I think it's important to grapple with the fact that the way we face uncertainty, the way we help our neighbors, the people who we trust in the public sphere, you know, do we trust science or do we give in to baseless politics? I think these kinds of lessons are the kinds of things that our kids will remember decades from now. Did mom and dad feel strong and purposeful and resolute in the face of uncertainty, or did we complain a lot? I think they will take these things to heart.
What about a checklist, Tim, or just things for parents to think about as they make this decision about sending their kid back to school? Now, let's just say some districts here in New Hampshire are going all remote, but there's a lot of hybrid and there's a fair number of all in person. That's the plan now. It could change, but go ahead, Tim.
So I think lots of parents are feeling like it's just out of control and the decision is too big to even make. So it can be incredibly helpful to boil it down into just a few different specific things you have to think about. So I think probably the most important one is how's the local epidemiology looking? If you're in a state like New Hampshire where things are settling down and not fantastic, but also not out of control in the way that Florida, Arizona, and Georgia are, then I think it's reasonable to think about going back to school. Then you can ask your question about the safety of the kid. You know, does your child have a special medical issue that might make her more vulnerable than the average person to the dangers of COVID-19? Or is she healthy and so it's safer for her to go back to school? Same thing with your household. I think the other sort of gut level thing you want to think about is where is your child in terms of their emotional development? I think for some kids, being with their classmates, interacting in person can be incredibly important, as Jess talked about. Whereas I think other kids, a year of cave time would not be the worst thing that happened to them, and
cave
that's okay.
Time. Go ahead, Tim. Sorry.
So I'm just, as a physician, I'm prescribing cave time for some proportion of the population. I think the other thing you want to think about is whether you have the ability as a household to have some other option than to send your kid into school full time or in some hybrid program. And I think we have to be honest that some households have options, and some, because they are essential workers or single parents or for whatever reason, really don't have that option. And I think we need to accept that and feel like, hey, you know, if you have options, great, leverage it. It's going to help you and other people. And if you don't, that's fine too. We can work out the safety plan in the school when you come.
So Tim, Jess alluded to this earlier, but I'd like your thoughts too, especially given your background as an epidemiologist. What are the benefits of being in school, even given the threat of the virus?
This is a neglected piece of this conversation. I think we focus on the risks of sending our kids to school, and of course we should think about that stuff. But it is equally clear that it is incredibly important for our children to go to school. For different kids, it might be emergently important versus just kind of generally important in a way that one year might not matter to. But it's important to children's emotional well-being, as Jess said, their social development to be able to interact. and learn the rules of social interaction, you could argue that's more important than whatever lesson they're going to learn in that week. It's also intellectually important to kids to be there in person. Online education can be fantastic, but I think in-person education is superior to half-baked online education. And so if possible, we want our kids to have that kind of education. We also know that even outside of the learning that kids do, many kids come to school as a refuge, that school is a place where they can have an adult they trust. It's a place where mandatory reporters can help keep them safe. It's a place where they can get a free lunch. And these are all incredibly important, life-altering, good sides to going back to school that we don't want to discount when we think about the risks.
Well, for our live audience with us, let us know, how are you adapting to the new school year? How have you changed your plans? And what drove those decisions? We'd love to hear from you. Lots of conversation going on right now on the chat, and I want to share some with you. In the chat, we did have a live audience member who wants your advice on how to prepare teens for a restrictive and thoroughly different school environment, since teens are looking forward to the social part of school, which will be largely absent. And also, how can we help our kids be comfortable going back to school, but be aware of being safe without stressing them out further? Those are great questions. And KJ, how about you? You've got more than one teenager. How do you prepare your teens for going back, and it's not going to be, you know, as fun and social as it was last year?
One of my teens is sitting here with me.
Great.
So, when we have been talking about preparing for this year, we've really been focused on how, you know, sort of anything can happen. It's going to be unexpected. You're going to be asked to really step up and be flexible. We hope that there will be sports, but we don't have any way of knowing. And I don't exactly know that we've done anything super special other than just to have this very open family conversation constantly about what's happening and what other places are doing and, you know, how long it's going to go on and we talk about it sort of all the time and endlessly. And I know that the kids talk about it with their friends as well.
So let's bring your son in, Wyatt, going into ninth grade. Wyatt, thanks for being with us. So how are you feeling about that question that one of our audience members asked? You know, school is not going to be as social as it once was. You guys got to wear masks. You're not supposed to be too close together. What are you thinking around that, Wyatt?
I think a lot of kids are really going to struggle with the not as social aspect of school because, I mean, just remembering from last year, one of the main parts of school, people are really just with each other, and especially in the classroom if you're in a group project with your friends eating lunch. I think people are going to have a really hard time staying, especially the 6 feet apart part of things. Also, knowing from I've been playing soccer recently, our town has a low number of cases. We're able to do this. And people are supposed to be wearing masks the whole time, but sometimes kids forget. Sometimes kids are not wearing them. I don't think that a lot of kids understand the importance of, especially with a wearing masks part of things. So I think that it's going to be hard to have everybody wearing masks at once. I think people are going to struggle with that a lot.
What do you want parents to sort of know and understand what this is like for you?
Well, I know with a lot of schools, they're going back to at least 50% online for all the kids. And one of the things with online school is with normal school, especially going into a new grade, you're learning new things that the teacher's been doing for forever. But with online school, even the teachers haven't been doing it for any longer than you have. So sometimes something might happen, a mistake might be made. It's not always your kid's fault. You don't have to instantly blame them. You can maybe just look at it for a little bit, maybe talk to your kid about it instead of instantly just seeing it as their fault. An example of that might be if your kid hasn't gotten all their work in on time, it might be some technical issues more than just them not doing everything. Another important thing I think parents should know, especially doing now these times when kids aren't really allowed to go see all of their friends. They're usually especially limited to a very short number to keep in a bubble. I know My parents don't do this, but I know with some of my friends, their parents will take away their phone if they do something wrong or if they just have been on it too much in the day. But that's like their main way of communicating with their friends right now, especially later in the night. I know some kids have like a device curfew, and that's fine if you're keeping that. But just think about during these times, they might want to just FaceTime one of their friends that they haven't been with for a while.
It's the only connection you have, really. Yeah. What about teachers, Wyatt?
Something I don't really know what the teachers have been preparing for recently over the summer, but I know something that can happen a lot of times is by mistake, but a teacher might compare a student to a separate student. But especially with this new online thing we have going on, a lot of the kids are going to take it very differently. So if the teachers are like, how come you're not able to do this? Everybody else is doing it just fine. That kid might be facing completely separate issues, especially with the whole fact that one kid might, especially if they're coming from a less wealthy family, might not have as good internet. They might not be able to see the videos and stuff that they're putting out as well. Might have trouble connecting to Skype calls. Parents, the teachers should really make sure that they're being really understanding with that whole part of things, because it's not just new for them, and the kids get that it can be stressful. But that goes both ways. It's not just for the teacher.
Wyatt, I'm so happy you came to talk to us today. Thank you very much. Really appreciate
it. Yeah, no problem.
Good luck in the school year.
Thank you.
A 9-year-old watching live has one word for her thought on the upcoming school year in all capital letters: awful. Thanks to her. Jessica, what does that make you think? Awful.
All summer long, you know, I've been talking with a lot of parenting educators and educators themselves about, you know, just the struggle. Teachers have been struggling to try to get, Wyatt said that, you know, he doesn't know what teachers have been preparing for. Well, everyone's been in that same boat. Teachers didn't know what they were preparing for until just recently. In fact, there's some teachers right now who are still being asked to prepare for both for in-person and virtual and possibly hybrid. I think it's really important also to remember that online learning or remote learning or distance learning, all of whatever it is you want to call it, there are nuances. This is a skill that people train for. And most teachers, nearly all teachers, none of them, hardly any of them, have had any specific training in online teaching and teaching, you know, via this platform. And so it's not like, okay, well, now they've had a summer, I'm sure they've got it all figured out now. That is not at all the case. They're doing the best they can with the tools they've been given. Many teachers are purchasing their own webcams, purchasing their own supplies. It's a really difficult situation right now. Some teachers are having to do it from home. Some are being asked to report to school. And some of those teachers have their own children that they're having to deal with as well. So how they're juggling all of it right now, I have no idea how that's going to work for them. But I think this is a really great opportunity to remember that and to say, okay, let's cut the kids some slack, let's cut the teachers some slack, let's cut the administration some slack, and let's cut the parents some slack. I think this is going to be a huge moment for understanding this from other people's perspective. And I would love to circle back around to the fact that this is an incredible opportunity for us to be discussing that with the kids, to say, look, I know this is really frustrating, but can you imagine what it must be like to love being a teacher, because you love being in a classroom with your students and you love hugging your students and being there with them in person, and suddenly you're having to be this talking head on a technology that maybe you don't even understand very well. Can you imagine what that must be like for your teacher? That's a really great opportunity to sort of expand some of these social emotional skills. But let's cut everybody some slack right now. Whenever you want to sit down and fire off that really angry email to the teacher, or get angry at your student for possibly missing an assignment, let's just take a breath and pause.
Here's another question from the chat. A first grade teacher named Laura says she would love suggestions for how to balance the need to encourage and enforce the health and safety guidelines without scaring everyone. And Tim, I'm going to throw that to you. It's a great question.
Well, first, I want to thank you for giving me the easy question. You know, I think, one, we want to be really confident in the resilience of children. I've seen children receive life-threatening diagnoses or confront the real challenges of serious illness. And time after time, parents and clinicians are surprised at the strength of children. They understand about illness and they understand about death, and it is scary to them. But I actually think they are grappling with this. And so being upfront with them about some of these risks, I think, is okay. And of course, we have to keep an eye on how they're handling the conversation we're having with them, and, you know, making sure we give it in small doses. But I think it would be foolhardy for us to pretend that they're not aware that there's a historically unprecedented epidemic happening.
All right.
I think we can also talk with kids about really pragmatic, age-appropriate ways of staying safe. You know, we can make it feel more controllable for them. It's not just a litany of statistics that they're seeing on the evening news, which, by the way, if you have the TV on, you should turn that off for whatever reason you have it on. But if they're just sort of confronting these sort of amorphous statistics and this feeling of general threat, that's going to be much more discomforting for a child than some specific ways that they can make a difference, whether it's wearing a mask or picking which few special friends they're going to be in a bubble with. I think that can make them feel like, hey, I had a little bit of control over this. I gave back, and it'll be okay.
We'll be right back with more from our virtual broadcast, The Exchange Live from Home, that took place this past Tuesday at 7 p.m. I'm Laura Kanoy. This is The Exchange. Today, we're airing our recent virtual event, The Exchange Live from Home. This show was previously recorded, so we won't take your calls and emails at this time. Welcome back to The Exchange Live from Home. We're talking about how families are feeling as they look to the new school year. And to our live audience, tell us what worked well for you at the end of the last school year. Was there a problem you were able to solve? Something positive you learned about your child? Or the way that your school, the teachers, the administrators adapted to this pandemic? We are talking with Jessica Leahy, a teacher and writer. Her book is called The Gift of Failure. Also Tim Leahy, he's an epidemiologist at the University of Vermont Medical Center, and Jess's husband. They've been writing together about back-to-school issues. And also with us, KJ Delantonia. She's a writer, the former editor of the New York Times Motherlode blog, and author of the book How to Be a Happier Parent. And let's go right back to the chat, all of you. One person wants to know about how the loss of social emotional learning through clubs, sports, and things like accurate grades, SAT testing, etc., could impact kids' college options and their futures. And Jess, I'm going to throw that to you again because I know you've written about this and thought about it in your role as a teacher.
Yeah, so a lot of schools, a lot of colleges are recognizing that the admissions process is going to look a little bit different for the next couple of years. And many schools have already decided to go test optional. So a bunch of schools came out about within the last month and said, look, for the next couple of years, ACT and SAT, that's not going to be something that we're going to prioritize as heavily. There are going to be a lot of kids that are going to have some blank spaces and some need to repeat. I think in about 2 years, we're going to see freshmen coming into that first year of college with some gaps, maybe not having as strong of an understanding of the math that they might have had. And that's going to be especially acute among kids who are lower income. You know, right now we know, for example, down in Boston, there was a statistic from that I read in the Boston Globe that about 70% of kids in Boston public schools had no contact with an educator after schools let out for COVID. So there are kids who didn't go to school after this whole COVID thing started last spring. So there are going to be a lot of kids who are going to be in really sort of dire circumstances when it comes to meeting all of the graduation requirements, if not on paper, then sort of on a very real basis. It's going to be really interesting to see how colleges cope with that in the next couple of years. But frankly, and I'd love to come back to this again, I think it's going to be really important to keep our eye on the real goal, which is helping our kids emotionally, helping our kids socially, understanding that what our kids need from us right now is not another person nagging them to get their math homework done in a timely fashion. I think there's a lot we need to be listening for right now with our kids.
Well, Jamie, whose 9-year-old wrote earlier saying she feels like this will be awful. She wants to clarify, this is not a complaint about the teachers, but it's just how she feels about the entire situation we are all in, how much she misses being in her classroom with her peers and teachers. And KJ, I just love your thoughts on that.
I feel so sad that, you know, awful is sort of her gut reaction, and I totally get it. And that this actually, for me, also kind of ties into that question of how colleges are going to look at our kids and what they did during the pandemic. And if suddenly, you know, your exclusive private school was still able to feel like it could give grades and you know, audit the children like they always have, whereas my public school had to go pass fail because not everyone in our area has internet. So it's a little, you know, much to judge people by the speed of their connection. This could be for your 9-year-old and for, you know, our high school students. It can also be an opportunity to find something in themselves and for themselves that is something that they can be excited about. We're not going to get the kinds of sports seasons that we used to get. If you're a child who likes to play in orchestra, it's probably not going to happen, certainly not in the same way. Chorus, spelling bees, dance classes, the kinds of things that our kinds sort of, you know, the kinds of little ladders that our kinds began to climb, those are not in, they're not going to be there anymore. But it's also, and I'm not Pollyanna about this, I am not saying, yay, be grateful for your time at home, but it is a chance for our kids to look for something that means something to them. There are things, you know, that our kids didn't have time to do before that now maybe they do. And, you know, that's probably, when they look back at this, I really think they're going to look at the things they did as much as the things they did not.
We've talked a lot about the emotional development that kids get from being at school, and I'd like to talk more about this. Besides connecting online, KJ, what arrangements have you seen families making this summer so that children and teens can be with their peers instead of their parents and their siblings all the time?
Well, we are so lucky here in New Hampshire. Most of our counties have, you know, fairly low incidence. Our county has actually had zero as at some point last week. So I think parents are feeling a little better. And the opportunity to be outside, which, you know, we don't have in the winter, is huge. So I'm seeing a lot of families letting kids socialize outside in a, and not even necessarily in a masked way, depending on the family, depending on what it is that you're doing. So, you know, lots of hiking, lots of backyard, not parties, but, you know, gatherings. And just one of my children has been taking a paddleboard out on the pond that's in our town with four of her friends who have also scrounged up paddleboards. Hey, they're on a 6-foot-long paddleboard. We know they're 6 feet apart. It's been kind of a charming way to go about it. So I think people have been trying to find ways to let the kids get together, knowing that as we head into things getting colder, we're probably all going to end up huddled in our caves again.
Tim, from the doctor and parent point of view, what types of gatherings feel okay to you, Tim, and what types don't?
I think it's really important to know that there is no zero risk activity in life. And so a small amount of risk is unavoidable. But being outside, being usually 6 feet away from the people you're with, I think is about as close to zero risk as you can expect to get in life. Getting inside with a crowd of people without their masks on the other side is the nightmare scenario for the physicians hoping not to have a surge this fall. You know, if you need to run inside to get something and then run back outside to join your friends outside, that's not a big deal. But I do think it makes sense to try to avoid spending time with people who are outside of your household or outside of your bubble inside. And if you can't avoid that thing, be sure to have that mask on.
Do kids need to mask up when they're outside? What do you think, Tim? What's your sort of medical perspective on that?
I think it partly depends on the setting they're going to be in and partly depends on the kid's age. So for kids who are old enough to wear a mask, and the AAP is recommending that kids over 2 at least try it, and the older you get, the more we can expect of them. If they're going to be in a place where they might be within 6 feet of other people outside of their household, it makes sense to wear it. So if you're you know, walking in a crowded downtown street, and at this moment you're not within 6 feet of people, but it's predictable that you're going to run into somebody, you should wear a mask. On the other hand, if you're on a hike and there is nobody but you out there on that trail, I think that's a great time to get a break from wearing a mask. So you have to use a little bit of common sense about your setting currently and what's likely to happen in the next half an hour. It's important to think about which outdoor activities are the safest. You know, I think going outdoor and playing tackle football right now would be a bad idea. That's a good way to transmit the virus. On the other hand, going on a hike, playing tennis, playing a non-contact version of soccer, playing ultimate, I think those are pretty safe, and we might as well get out and enjoy it while we can. Well, skiing, other outdoor activities in the winter. I don't want to exclude that. Those are also really
sure,
low risk.
Although there'll be questions about lines at the lifts and in the lodge, but we'll set that aside for now. Thank goodness it's still summer. On the chat, Vicky says, we are having kids wear masks all day, including recess. This will be hard on kids. I'm assuming Vicky works at a school. And someone else says that they have set up an outdoor movie theater for the neighborhood. Bring your own chair, food, drink, all chairs 6 feet apart. And if you get up, mask up. Kids are loving it. KJ, what do you think of these sort of creative ideas that families are coming up with in their neighborhoods?
I think the creative ideas are fantastic. And, you know, if you get creative and you take some time to think about, you know, you can, I have friends that set up like the chairs that are 6 feet away from their porch so that as their neighbors are walking by, they can sit down and the friends sit out on their porch because that's, you know, that's what they do in their neighborhood. And that way they're able to, you know, spend some more time together and some more time talking. And I'm also seeing the sports that my kids are involved in trying really hard to come up with ways to make this work. So Wyatt mentioned that he's been doing some summer soccer. They're going to try to play a game in masks. We'll see how that goes, but that's, you know, they're going to give it a shot. There's another town team that has sort of agreed to do this, and it's, you know, it's entirely optional, but they're going to try it. I've had kids go to a hockey rink some this summer, and the hockey rink had set up, you know, they've put X's where the kids can be, the way that the grocery stores have, so that they can ensure that they're 6 feet apart. So, you know, if we open our minds, hopefully there's going to be some creative ways to do some things safely. We're just not going to be able to do all the things. And
so,
that's not entirely bad.
Jess, while the weather's good, as we've been saying, some parents feel okay about having their kids be with others outside doing some of these activities that were described. What kind of arrangements are you hearing parents talk about for October and November and December, Jess, when it's going to be hard to be outside? Or is that just going to be off the table?
Before I get to that, I want to really quickly mention, KJ was talking about creativity, and I heard the coolest thing from a teacher today, and I think it's important to remind parents that, especially when it comes to younger children, that self-control is not an unlimited quantity. When you look at the research on self-control and restraint, that we have a certain amount, and when we've used it up, it's going to be even harder for us to exercise that control. There's sort of a famous experiment with cookies, that if you sit there while the cookies are near you and you don't take any, then later on you're a lot more likely to gorge yourself on cookies because you felt like, because you used up all of your restraint. So I heard from a teacher today who said that she, while the weather's nice and they're back in school in person part of the time, she has an X on the pavement on the window right side outside of her classroom door. And if a kid is feeling like they just can't wear that mask for one more second, or they need to go outside and yell and scream to get their heebie-jeebies out, that the kid can go out there, stand on that X right outside the window, and just wiggle and not wear a mask and yell, just so they can have that moment of freedom. Because for little kids especially, that's going to be essential. I don't think we can expect that kids are going to be able to exercise restraint all day long. So having these creative solutions is going to be important. Thank goodness we live in New England where we just sort of go with the flow in the winter. There's not this expectation that, oh, it's a little chilly outside, we're not going to go outside. I think this is a winter, going to be a winter for snowshoes. This is going to be a winter for, this might be, if you can't afford a snowshoes, this would be an incredible opportunity to go out and get on YouTube and find out how to make your own snowshoes out of willow boughs and twigs, because there's going to be a lot of things that we just can't do this winter that we'll have some time to spend on other things. And, you know, going out there and making bow and arrows and making your own snowshoes and doing stuff outside. In fact, I just had some wood delivered and I realized that there's no reason whatsoever for my teenager to be lifting weights because there's a whole entire cord of wood that needs to be stacked. So there's the weightlifting right there. I think we're just, as KJ said, I think we're going to have to get really creative about how we give ourselves a break. And we need to remember how important it's going to be going into the fall with the shorter days, that we get that sunshine, we get the vitamin D, and that's a real game changer in terms of mood. And that is not just for adults. Kids really need to have some sunlight on their face, get a little bit of vitamin D, and have that light turn their mood around a little bit.
Sure.
So even if the weather's cold, let's just put on all of the gear and head outside anyway. I think that's going to be super important this winter.
We'll be right back with more from our virtual broadcast, The Exchange Live from Home, that took place this past Tuesday at 7 p.m. I'm Laura Kanoy. This is The Exchange. Today, we're airing our recent virtual event, The Exchange Live from Home. This show was previously recorded, so we won't take your calls and emails at this time. Welcome back to The Exchange Live from Home. We're checking in with Granite State families, asking how they're doing, what they're thinking about as they look at the new school year. Our guests are Jessica Leahy, a teacher and writer. Her book is called The Gift of Failure. Also with us, Tim Leahy. He's an epidemiologist at the University of Vermont Medical Center and Jess's husband. They've been writing together about back-to-school issues. And also with us, KJ Dell'Antonia. She's a writer, the former editor of the New York Times Motherlode blog, and author of the book How to Be a Happier Parent. And all of you, we have been talking with parents all around this state for many weeks leading up to back to school. And we interviewed a couple parents over the phone, asked them how they were feeling about some of the issues we're discussing. Here's one mother, Danielle from Canterbury, who has a daughter going into second grade and a son going into kindergarten. Now, Danielle is sending her daughter back to school in a hybrid model, but she's got concerns about her son's first year of school. Let's hear.
Having him start kindergarten with the current model, transitions are hard for kids that age anyway. Learning to be in school is basically what they cover in kindergarten. And learning to be in school with a mask on, with dividers between desks, staying away from friends, I just imagine it being something that will have to be constantly enforced and challenged. And I just can't bear to have him start school that way.
So Danielle told us that she plans to keep her son in preschool part-time instead. And wow, there's a lot to unpack there. And KJ, what kind of situations do parents find themselves in with more than one child, different ages, different needs? Danielle makes a good point. Transitions are really hard for little kids. So it's hard to imagine how you would make a transition, you know, every other day. When kids need that yes. regularity. What do you think, KJ?
Yeah, it's a really challenging situation. If you have more than one child, they're looking and if sort of what they're doing school-wise is different, they're looking at each other and going, well, wait, why does, you know, he get to go and I don't get to go or other things. I mean, that is really tough. And for those little kids, you know, the just starting schools, the 5 and the 6-year-olds, if you can take some space to create a more regular experience than you might be afraid they're going to have at school this fall, I can sure understand the urge to do it, because the more predictable you can make their days, the better it's going to be for them, and also the better it's going to be for you as a family and as a parent, whether you're a working parent or whether you're working at home. It's just, it's like you said, it's really challenging to put a kid through a lot of unexpected transitions.
And yet, Tim, you reminded us earlier too that kids are really resilient. So how do you know? How do you know this is a case where my kid is going to be fine, he or she will adapt, or no, it's too much. Danielle's son is, you know, a little kid going into kindergarten, and it's too much to throw at him.
It is a challenge, and I almost think it's good for each of us to see this from two lenses and almost to use those different lenses that we might use to make the right decision. So one lens is just a gut level instinct about how we think our kid would do in that particular situation. If honestly I think that going back to school in those circumstances is not good for my kids, I'm going to think about not doing it. I do want to pause, though, and make sure that I'm not just reacting to things being different from what I expected. You know, all of us have spent plenty of time in our lives, I feel confident I can say, complaining about the educational system. Well, it's going to be different this year, and it may well be different in ways that are even better. And so perhaps not being in school 5 days a week, day in, day out, is actually a good thing for the kid. And so I think it's good to sort of pause and say, am I just having a reaction to change here? Am I just deciding it's all wrong when actually it could be a nice new opportunity to go to school part-time? And I think with that check on our own natural pessimism and a gut-level reaction to what's good for the kid, we'll make the best decision we can, knowing that there is no perfect answer. We're just going to do our very best, and it'll work out.
No matter what the setup, kids are spending a lot more time at home, you know, and many parents, too, even if their job is outside. As we said earlier, parents don't have the activities and events and outside meetings that they used to have. KJ, to you first, what are you hearing? How do you think this has all altered family dynamics?
I am seeing both at our house and in the households around us a lot more sibling support and siblings being together and siblings getting over, you know, some reasons that they did not want to spend time together, whether that was maybe an age gap or a personality gap, and just, you know, realizing there's nobody else except this other person here. And, you know, if I want to play ping pong, my only opportunity to play ping pong is to persuade them that they also would like to play ping pong. So I think I'm kind of hopeful that a lot of us are going to come out of this with siblings who are closer to one another than they might otherwise have been if they'd been able to go about their usual somewhat distant and removed lives from one another.
What do you think, Jess?
In our family, our kids are 5 years apart. And during the teenage years in particular, there were some gaps years there that they didn't have a lot in common. And when our college kid came home early from college, suddenly we had the gift of a bunch of months where the kids got to know each other again. And on top of that, they were both still in school and having to learn remotely. And so the older kid got to hang with the younger kid while the younger kid was learning. And the older kid is interested in some things that the younger kid wasn't at the beginning of this. And so the younger kid got to watch some of the online lectures that the older kid watched. We've had to do a lot more compromising, which has been, I think, good for all of us. You know, family movie night can be this horror show where, you know, not metaphorical homeroom horror show, where it takes us 2 hours to figure out what movie to watch together, but we've had to really learn to compromise. We have a vegetarian and a carnivore, and cooking has gotten a little more complicated, and there's had to be more compromise around that. And that's what I'm also hearing from a lot of families, is that compromise has had to, you know, has been a big thing. Having to compromise over who gets to use the technology and when, you know, I work at home and I really need, for example, right now we're using most of our connection. And so the kid is having to be offline completely. And those are the compromises we make for each other in order to make this work. And I think that's been a good thing for all of us.
Tim, you know, it's often been said that kids are watching how we adults handle this pandemic. How should parents frame this, Tim, all we're going through, for our children?
I've been thinking about this from the point of view of citizenship. This is an incredible time, both in terms of the pandemic and also in the political sphere, for us to talk with our kids about what it means to be a contributing member of society. What does it mean to protect democratic freedoms? What does it mean to come together as a neighborhood to support each other? What is the nature of my privilege, and how can I help neighbors who are maybe more vulnerable to COVID-19, more vulnerable to the economic problems we're having, and how can I make a difference in the world? These are questions that have no easy answer, but I think if kids come to grapple with them, they're much more likely to be the kinds of leaders we would really be proud of. So I'm hoping they see us grapple with these questions, try to keep ourselves safe, but reach out to our neighbors and at the same time preserve the vote and fight for legitimate science and do things that I hope leave them with a better society than we inherited.
KJ, what do you think?
I think we are all on the COVID roller coaster, and sometimes it feels like, you know, we're going to get through this. And sometimes, you know, it feels like other things. And that openness that I was talking to about earlier, that willingness to share with your kids when you're feeling down about things, when you're discouraged, and when you're feeling better. And also to share the things that you're trying to do to make yourself feel better. To walk out in the morning and say, man, you know, I'm really low today. So what I'm going to do is, you know, I'm going to call your grandmother, because talking to her will cheer her up, and that will cheer me up. And then I'm going to go for a walk or whatever. Just to express to them that we are all facing these challenges and that we've at least got some ideas for ways to deal with it.
What do you think, Jess? How should we model? How should we frame what we're all going through for the kids? Because they're watching.
Here's where I get really optimistic, because I always believe that modeling for our kids is one of the best things that we can do for them. And we're all struggling right now. And giving kids the language to talk about what scares them and what worries them, this is a great time for us, now that we're all together all the time, to talk about what scares us and what makes us nervous, and help them learn the language and of those emotions. That's, you know, in the absence of them having all this exposure to their friends and all the social emotional learning stuff, language for emotions is a really big deal. The other thing that has been really interesting that I've been hearing from people who work with really young kids around anxiety is that when I need to feel better about this, I do this thing called temporal distancing, where I think about what it's going to be like when this is over and I can see my friends again. And that turns out that's a really helpful thing that we can do for kids, is say when you can go back to school in person again, when you can see your friends again, when this is over and things get back to normal. That helps kids feel like this isn't some amorphous forever situation. And so modeling that sort of feeling of, you know, planning and looking ahead to when things are better, that's going to be a really great thing for them to see in us.
Oh, that's interesting. I was wondering about that, Jess, because no one knew how long this thing was going to last. So
right. In
a way, I've been hesitant to say when this is over, we can do such and such, because we all thought it would be done by May. Then we thought it would be done over the summer. Then we thought it would be done by the fall. So I've been hesitant to do that. So give me a little more there on how to do that in a way that doesn't let kids down as it keeps going.
The good news is that, and I have the, you know, I have the scientist next to me, but the good news is that if you look at all of the worst pandemics we've ever had, none of them went on forever. None of them went on even for the span of a human generation. So if you look at the fact that in all likelihood, this will end at some point in the future, we can at least have conversations about the fact that there will be a time when you get to have a birthday party again. And there will be a time when you're going to get to blow candles out on your, you know, and have your friends all be there with you, and you'll get to get presents from all your friends. And in the meantime, this is a really interesting opportunity to get creative about how we do that. We attended a graduation ceremony for kids I've known since they were born, and their mother had assembled all of us via Zoom, and we got to all be there, and it was joyous. And they're going to remember that forever, too. You know, another graduation in person, that would have been wonderful. But how we came together for them in these unique circumstances, in these really challenging circumstances, that's also really special. And I don't want to discount those moments for them.
on the
chat. Can I strike another optimistic
note?
Sure.
Yeah, go ahead. I would love that, KJ.
This is taking this whole discussion just sort of, and stepping back and taking a look at the forest here. So for many, 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 many years, we have lived in a culture that has not been super helpful to our families and has not recognized the ways that childcare and schooling impact the way that people work, the way that women in particular can and cannot be in the workforce. You know, we live in a society where the school hours are 8 to 3, but work hours are 9 to 5, almost inevitably. We are the last remaining Western nation with no family leave, all of these ways that we have not supported our families in the past. And now, suddenly, we are in this situation where the fact that the economy rides on our school system is crystal clear. It's unavoidable. You cannot deny that people can't go to work unless their kids can go to school. And I'm very hopeful that as we come out of this, we're gonna find ways to support our families and our working parents better. And, you know, I don't know what those are gonna look like, but it does excite me. I think it's gonna be a silver lining.
Well,
and really interesting innovation happens during necessity as well. So I think we're going to find new ways to do things that right now feel really onerous because we don't have a great way to do it right now. But we'll figure out new and better ways.
We've been talking with Jessica Leahy, a teacher and writer for a wide variety of publications. Her book is called The Gift of Failure. And Tim Leahy, he's an epidemiologist at the University of Vermont Medical Center and Jess's husband. They've been writing together about back to school from a teaching, parenting, and health perspective. Also, KJ Delantonia, she's a writer, the former editor of the New York Times Motherload blog, and author of the book How to Be a Happier Parent. Her new novel is called The Chicken Sisters. Our team here at The Exchange Live from Home is led by producer Christina Phillips, along with engineering from RJ Perkins and Dan Colgan. Jessica Hunt was running the cameras. Our executive producer is Michael Brindley, and Patricia McLaughlin is our director of marketing and communications. Tim Brady is in charge of corporate support, and the wonderful graphics and design you saw tonight by Sarah Plourd. This is The Exchange Live from Home. I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.